formatted to fit your screen and edited both for content and to run in the time allotted. Warner Brothers Pictures, a Time Warner Entertainment Company. A lighthouse sweeps its beacon, Castle Rock Entertainment, a Time Warner company. Castle Rock Entertainment presents a Dark Woods production, The Green Mile, directed by Frank Darabont, starring Tom Hanks as Paul Edgecombe, David Morse as Brutus Brutal Howell, Bonnie Hunt as Jan Edgecombe, Michael Clark Duncan as John Coffey, James Cromwell as Warden Hal Moores, Michael Jeter as Edward Del Delacroix, Graham Greene as Arlen Bitterbuck, Doug Hutchison as Percy Wetmore, Sam Rockwell as William Wild Bill Wharton, Barry Pepper as Dean Stanton, Jeffrey DeMunn as Harry Terwilliger, Patricia Clarkson as Melinda Moores, and Harry Dean Stanton as Toot. A heavyset man dressed in overalls, plaid shirt, and cap walks in slow motion through a field of cotton balls carrying a shotgun. Moments later, more men in hats and toting guns follow. A middle-aged blonde man wearing a white sleeveless undershirt and carrying a shotgun plucks a bit of white and yellow cloth from a plant stalk. He grimaces and speaks soundlessly in slow motion. He turns and runs forward past the others, who now also pick up the pace. Now a man snaps open his eyes, his shaggy white eyebrows rising. His moist blue eyes stare, then dart around and blink. Lying in bed, he kicks off his covers and sits up. Light shines in through a large window opposite the bed. He turns off a radio. Now a gray-haired woman uses a wheelchair. The man rounds a corner and places a hand on her shoulder.
Good morning, Estelle.
How about looking, Paul?
That's better. That's better.
Paul, wearing a buttoned shirt and cardigan, continues inside a crowded cafeteria. A gray-haired woman smiles at Paul over her teacup. He smiles back and winks. A man wearing a white uniform stands behind a food table.
Morning, Mr. Edgecombe. Some Danish this morning?
No, just two pieces of dry toast, Hector, thanks. Leftovers fine.
Dry and cold, same as always.
Cold is better.
Hector smiles and looks down.
Especially on those long walks.
Paul raises an eyebrow.
Am I right?
He wraps some toast in wax paper.
Don't let Nurse Godzilla catch you. She'll raise holy hell. Where do you go every day? What do you do up in those hills?
Just walk. I like to walk.
Paul smiles. Hector grins and looks Paul over.
You try not to fall down, bust a hip. I don't want to be no search party.
Paul smiles and turns away. Now Paul passes a busy kitchen. He snatches an orange slicker off a peg on the wall and pushes open a screen door. He walks onto a white-trimmed veranda, slipping the coat on as he goes. Now Paul walks on a grassy hill, the house far away in the distance. Thunderclouds gather in the graying sky. The hood on Paul's raincoat covers his head. As he walks up the hill, Paul removes the toast from the pocket of his cardigan and takes a bite. Later still, he walks on a dirt path into a forest. The path opens onto a weathered gray clapboard shack with brown shingles. Old furniture lies amid shrubbery by the front door. Paul approaches the side of the house and stops. He pulls the hood back from his head and looks back the way he came. He peers into the house through a cobwebbed window. Later at the retirement home, a crowd sits in a large room watching TV.
What? You want this man costume?
Explain the moral basis of that.
You're dead! You can't come back!
Paul stares at the floor. The gray-haired woman sits beside him.
Are you all right? You look tired. You're not yourself.
No, I'm fine. I promise.
You're wearing yourself out with those walks every day. That's what I think. Not that you ask me.
I just didn't sleep well, so I had a few bad dreams. It happens. I'll be fine.
An early television program. A man wearing thick glasses shakes his head.
Well, Madge doesn't care. I certainly don't.
Neither do I. All I know is...
Now, this here's worth a look.
A black and white movie with Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire. Paul slowly lifts his head. Fred and Ginger dance in a close embrace.
But I can hardly speak. And I seem to find the happiness I see when we're out together dancing cheek to cheek. Heaven, I'm in heaven.
Paul smiles, then his lips starts to quiver and he raises his hand to his face.
seem to vanish like a gambler's lucky.
The woman turns to Paul, her eyes narrowing.
What is it?
He lowers his head.
Oh, my God.
She places her hand behind his neck and peers down at him. Others turn and stare.
Got to get out of here.
He stands and walks to the doorway. The woman follows close behind. Now they sit alone in a darkened room. Rain runs down a wall of windows. Paul sits, stirring a teacup.
I guess sometimes the past just catches up with you, whether you want it to or not. Silly.
Was it the film? It was, wasn't it?
I haven't spoken of these things for a long time, Ellie. Over 60 years.
Paul, I'm your friend.
Paul stares down at the table. He blinks, then looks up.
I ever tell you that I was a prison guard during the Depression?
You've mentioned it.
Did I mention that I was in charge of death row, that I supervised all the executions?
Ellie raises her eyebrows and shakes her head. Paul looks down.
Usually, death row is called the last mile. We called ours the green mile. The floor was the color of faded limes. We had the electric chair. Oh, Sparky, we called it. Oh, I've lived a lot of years, Ellie, but 1935, that takes the prize. That year, I had the worst urinary infection of my life, and that was also the year of John Coffey and the two dead girls.
Now a sunny day on a dusty road, rows of prisoners chained at the ankles. An old model paddy wagon rolls up to a fenced gate in front of a large brick building. A uniformed guard in his 20s with a blonde crew cut and blue eyes unlocks a cell door and pushes it open.
You block?
Yeah. Right.
A tall, muscular guard hangs up the phone. Now, a 40-ish Paul stands over a toilet, grimacing.
Well, listen, give me a minute.
The two guards, standing outside, exchange glances.
You all right in there?
Yeah.
The tall guard grins and steps back from the stippled glass door. He glances at a pocket watch. Paul emerges from the bathroom, wiping his face. The guard shakes his head.
You should have took the day off, going to see the doctor.
With a new arrival, you know better. Besides, it's not as bad as it was. I think it's clearing up.
Paul puts on his hat. The guard raises his watch.
All right, let's look alive, Dean.
Yes, sir.
The blue-eyed guard nods. Paul touches his lower abdomen. The tall guard looks out a grated window.
Look at him. They're riding on the axle.
The paddy wagon stops outside. The vehicle's rear rides low to the ground. A guard steps out and pulls open the wagon's metal back doors.
What'd they do? They bust the springs?
Two bare, chained, dark-skinned feet step from the vehicle. It springs back up.
Oh.
A guard leads the prisoner through the yard.
Dead man! Dead man walking! We got a dead man walking here.
What is he yelling about?
The tall guard faces Paul.
Paul? You might want to reconsider getting in the cell with this guy. He's enormous.
Can't be bigger than you.
Paul grins at him, his eyes twinkling. The guard rolls his eyes and exhales. Grinning, he glances at Dean, then walks to the door and unlocks it.
Dead man!
Paul's smile fades as the door is opened. He rolls his eyes.
Dead man! Dead man walking! Dead man walking here!
The guards and prisoners in cells stare up at the passing prisoner.
We got a dead man walking here! Dead man walking! We got a dead man walking here.
Percy,
it's enough.
Percy, only as tall as the prisoner's massive biceps, cocks his head. The dark-skinned prisoner wears denim overalls and a white shirt that stretches over his thickly muscled chest. Other prisoners gawk open-mouthed. An American Indian man and a small 50-ish balding man with curly gray hair. Percy and his prisoner stop before Paul.
I'm not going to have any trouble with you, big boy.
Paul looks the prisoner over, then cocks his ear.
Can you talk?
Beads of sweat glisten on the prisoner's chest and bald head. He has large, deep-set brown eyes.
Yes, sir, boss. I can talk.
Paul eyes him, then walks inside the open cell. The prisoner's eyes follow him. Percy whacks the prisoner's chest with a billy club.
Move your ass. Let's go.
The prisoner crouches under the doorway and sidles inside. Paul studies a clipboard.
Percy, they're moving house down in the infirmary. Why don't you go see if they can use some help?
They got all the men they need.
Why don't you just go and make sure?
Uh-uh.
I don't care where you go, Percy. Just as long as you're not here at this very moment.
He fixes a steady gaze on Percy, who smiles and shakes his head. Percy turns and smacks into the tall guard's chest. He backs away as the guard grins down at him. Percy passes the cell of the small gray-haired man, who grasps the bars and smiles. Percy clubs his fingers.
Wipe that grin off his set face.
Percy, get the heck off my block.
Percy gapes at Paul, who stares back with a set jaw. Percy nods.
Mm-hmm.
Percy strides off. The American Indian watches through heavy-lidded brown eyes.
We're gonna get that looked at, Dell. In the meantime, you just stay quiet.
Yeah?
Paul eyes the massive prisoner.
I'll let Harry take those chains off you. You're gonna be nice.
The prisoner nods. Harry, with gray hair, brown eyes, and shaggy brown eyebrows, hands a brown envelope to Dean, then steps into the cell. Harry unlocks the chains at the prisoner's wrists and ankles. Paul reads off a clipboard.
Your name is John Coffey.
Yes, sir, boss. Like to drink, only not spelled the same.
Oh, you can spell, can you?
Just my name, boss. J-O.
My name is Paul Edgecombe. If I'm not here, you can ask for Mr. Terwilliger, Mr. Howell, or Mr. Stanton, these gentlemen right there.
Dean waves.
Questions?
Do you leave the light on after bedtime?
Paul stares wide-eyed.
Because I get a little scared in the dark sometimes. If it's a strange place.
Paul glances at the three other guards standing outside the cell. They look away.
Stays pretty bright around here all night long. We always keep a few lights burning out in the corridor.
Corridor?
Right out there.
Paul nods toward the hallway. Coffey follows his gaze. He turns back to Paul and extends his palm. Paul backs away. The other guards tense. Dean removes his club from its holster and brings it up. Harry stares at Paul. Then, with a tiny shake of his head, Paul reaches out and shakes Coffey's hand. They release hands, and Paul nods at him once before turning to leave. He pauses at the threshold.
You can sit.
Paul nods toward a bunk lining the back of the cell. Coffey sits on it as Paul leaves the cell. Harry slides the bars closed, and Dean locks it. Paul smiles at Mr. Howell and looks back at Coffey. The smile slowly fades from his face as he and Coffey lock eyes. Coffey sits and stares straight ahead.
I couldn't help it, boss. I tried to take it back, but it was too late.
Paul turns away. Now the guards head down the corridor and enter a back office.
Dean, pull Delacroix's car, take him down to the infirmary. See those fingers are broken?
Yes.
Of course they're broken. I heard his bones crack.
Did you hear what he was yelling when we brought the big dumb in?
How could I miss it, Harry? The whole prison heard.
Big dumb, Tracy. You probably have to answer for sending him off the mile.
I'll chew that food when I have to. Right now, I want to hear about this new inmate, aside from how big he is, okay?
Brutus grins.
Monstrous big. Damn.
Oh, he seems meek enough. Is he retarded, you figure?
Mm-hmm. Looks like they sent us an imbecile to execute.
Imbecile or not, he deserves to fry for what he done.
Harry slides the brown envelope onto Paul's desk.
Make your blood curdle.
Later, Paul sits outside in the daylight reading. Now, sunlight dawns in a pink sky over a farmhouse. A small man, stubble on his face and wearing coveralls, carries a bucket past a large tree toward a barn. He drops the bucket and runs to the house. Paul flips a page of the report.
What? God's sake, what?
The girls! The girls are gone! Papa! Papa, look! Daddy's blood!
A boy points to a blood trail leading out an open porch door.
Oh, my God.
At the prison, Paul reads on. Now the man and the boy load shotguns.
Damn it, woman, get on that phone now. Tell him we had it with. You mind what I'm saying? He had it with.
Are you on the line? Oh, God, please. Somebody to my little girls.
The man and boy run out of the house past the clothesline. Now a group of men in work clothes and holding shotguns run through a field. Paul flips a page of the report. Now the man races through a shallow pond. Following behind, a man runs three big hounds. A rag doll lies on the ground. The stubbled man looks up, panting. Across a clearing, John Coffey leans against a fallen log. He clutches two bloody-haired little girls at his sides. The man dashes through another pond, stumbles, and drops his shotgun. The other men following him level their guns at Coffey. The man reaches Coffey and punches both sides of his face repeatedly. Two men pull the enraged man off of Coffey and hold him. The man staggers backward as his son steps up to him. They hug. The men stare stone-faced at Coffey. Blood soaks his white t-shirt and overalls. He caresses the girl's hair, now stained red. A man wearing a badge steps forward.
I couldn't help it. I tried to take it back, but it was too late.
The man wearing the badge points a rifle under Coffey's chin.
Boy, you under arrest for murder.
I interrupt.
Paul looks up.
Just about done.
A tall, thin man in his 50s with a hawk-like nose and thin blonde hair sits on the bleachers next to Paul in the prison yard.
Hey. How's that pretty gal of yours?
Linda's not so well, Paul. Not so well at all.
More headaches?
Got laid up with another one yesterday. Worst one yet. I'll be taking over to Vicksburg next day or so for some tests. Head x-rays and who knows what else. She is scared to death. Truth to tell, so am I.
It's something they can see on the x-ray. Maybe it's something they can fix.
Maybe.
The thin man nods and looks down. He pulls a folded paper from his vest pocket.
This just came in. DOE on Bitterbuck.
Paul takes the paper and grins, his eyes narrowing.
You didn't come all the way down here just to hand me a DOE.
I had an angry call from the state capitol about 20 minutes ago. Is it true you ordered Percy Wetmore off the block?
It is.
Now, I'm sure you had reason, Paul, but like it or not, the wife of the governor of this state has only one nephew, and his name happens to be Percy Wetmore.
Little Percy calls his aunt and squeals like a schoolroom sissy. He also mentioned he assaulted a prisoner this morning at a ship petulance. Broke three fingers in Edouard Delacroix's left hand.
I didn't hear that part. I'm sure she didn't either.
The man is mean and careless and stupid, and it's a bad combination in a place like this. Sooner or later, he's going to get somebody hurt or worse.
Stick with it, Paul. May not be much longer. I have it on good authority that Percy has an application in at Briar Ridge.
Briar Ridge? The mental hospital?
Administration job. Better pay.
Then why is he still here? You get that application pushed through. His connections, he could have any state job he wants. You know what I think.
Paul blinks and shakes his head. Nearby, the American Indian prisoner walks alone, smoking.
Well, he'll get his chance then, won't he? Maybe then he'll be satisfied and move on. In the meantime, you'll keep the peace?
Of course. Of course.
The man pats Paul's arm.
Thank you, Paul.
The man rises and climbs down the bleachers. Paul stares after him.
Al, give Melinda my love, okay? I'm sure that x-ray turned out to be nothing at all.
You bet.
Arms on his hips, Hal nods and leaves. Paul unfolds the paper. Death warrant, and underneath in bold type, date of execution, July 10th. Later, Paul and Dean sit on opposite sides of a wooden electric chair, sanding and polishing it. They look up.
Paul, Dean.
They go to the doorway and stick their heads out.
Yeah?
brutal, standing with his arms folded, waves them over to the center of the cell block.
I guess the legislature loosened up those price strings enough to hire on a new guard.
They join the smiling Brutal. Between the rows of cells, the dimly lit green floor is bare. Paul and Dean look at Brutal.
Look again. He's right there.
Brutal points to a bolted door at the end of the hall. A brown mouse scurries out from underneath it, headed in their direction.
It ain't normal for a mouse to come upon people this way.
The mouse man. What are you seeing foaming at the mouse man?
I don't see its mouth at all.
The mouse pauses. Brutal turns to a desk behind them. He takes a cookie off a sheet of wax paper.
Oh, Brutal, no. We'll be hip deep in my
surroundings. I just want to see what it'll do. In the interest of science, like.
Brutal crouches and drops a piece of cookie on the floor. The men watch as the mouse creeps toward the morsel. The gray-haired bitterbuck props himself up in his bed and peers through the bars of his cell. The mouse nibbles. Paul and Brutal smile. Bitterbuck watches as the animal chews. The mouse leaves his food and scampers back across the floor. He slips into the dark crevice under the bolted door. Dean throws up his hand and lets it fall against his thigh. Later, at the end of the cell block, two guards sit at the desk. Down the hall, the mouse sits and scrubs himself with his paws. He hurries up the corridor, passing the cells. Dell, the small gray-haired prisoner, stands and presses his face to the bars of his cell. The tiny rodent stops a few feet away from Percy, who whistles as he combs his dark hair in front of a mirror. The mouse cleans himself again. Percy tilts his head. He freezes with his mouth partially open and holding the comb chest high. He slowly turns his head. The mouse sits cleaning itself on the tile behind him.
You little son of a bitch.
Harry and Bill look up.
Well, I'll be darned.
There he is. I thought Brutal was pulling my leg.
And it's a mouse.
Yeah. Brute said he was in here last night begging for food. He come right on up to the desk.
Give him some room, Percy.
Huh?
See what he does.
All right.
Percy grips the baton on his belt. Harry removes his glasses and squints at the floor. The mouse moves closer to the desk and looks up toward them.
He's a brave little bandit. Gotta give him that.
Harry breaks a cracker and tosses a piece to the mouse, who sneaks toward it. The mouse holds the piece with his forepaws and eats. Percy glances at the other guards and eases his club from its holster. The mouse's beady black eyes stare forward. Now, Bill throws a piece of cracker to the floor. Percy flings his club at the mouse. The mouse scurries away as Percy lifts a trash can over his head. Percy hurls the trash can. The mouse runs down the hall.
Hunt you, little vermin! I'm going to stop your life! Ow!
It's just a little mouse!
You dirty, you ugly little...
The mouse scurries under the bolted door.
Percy! I'm going to rip your diseased head off!
Percy unlocks a padlock on the door's bolt. Now, Brutal and Paul stroll down an outside staircase with their lunchboxes. Suddenly, they rush across an open yard. Prisoners gawk behind a fence.
Yeah, what's going on?
Brutal and Paul burst into the cell block. Paul swivels his head toward Harry.
Percy met your mouse.
Percy tosses a bucket from a cluttered room.
It's in here somewhere.
Percy.
Huh?
Knock yourself out.
Hope you nail a bandit.
Oh, yeah.
Later, a sweat-soaked Percy drags furniture out of the room and into the hall. Other guards walk up behind him.
Gosh, ain't in there, huh? Don't that beat the mousy band?
Percy approaches the padded, empty room.
Percy?
Percy turns.
You want to think about what you were doing just now?
I was trying to get the mouse. Are you blind?
You also scared the living crap out of me and Bill. Not to mention the inmates.
So what? They aren't cradle school.
case you didn't notice. Although you treat them that way half the time.
We don't scare them any more than we have to, Percy. They're under enough strain as it is.
Men under strain can snap, hurt themselves and hurt others. That's why our job is talking, not yelling. You'd be better to think of this place like it's an intensive care ward of a hospital.
Anybody doesn't like it? You kiss my eye.
Bertle grabs Percy's throat.
Yeah, you try it. Go on, try it. You'll be on the breadlines before the week is out.
Okay, Brutal.
Brutal clenches Percy's collar, pinning him to the wall. Percy glances at Paul, then at the glaring Brutal, who releases his grip. Percy smooths his slick brown hair and fixes his shirt.
We all know who your connections are, Percy. You ever threaten a man on this block again, we all gonna have a go. Job be damned.
You done?
Get all this stuff back in the restraint room. You are cluttering up my mile.
Paul turns and walks away. The other guards leave Percy standing in the doorway of the empty restraint room. The cell block's long brick facade. The letter E is painted in black on the left corner. Inside, Bitterbuck sits with a blank stare. Paul approaches.
Honor, your daughter and her family are here.
Now, a pair of guards flank the handcuffed Bitterbuck as they lead him out of the block.
Let's move. One of these two rehearsals before he gets back.
Now, a haggard man in Bitterbuck's cell.
Sit down. Everybody settle.
Alan Bitterbuck, step forward.
Stepping forward, stepping forward, stepping forward.
Is his head properly shaved?
Nope, it's all dandruff and smells.
I will take that as a yes.
I'm sorry for all the bad stuff I done. People I've tramped on and everything, and I hope they forgive me, and I'll never do it again. That's for sure. Walking the mile, walking the green mile, walking the mile, walking in the mile. Sitting down now, in a seat in old Sparky.
What do I do?
Watch and learn.
Standing at the electric chair, Paul nods. Percy rolls his eyes and moves behind a partition wall. A stony-faced guard stands near electrical equipment.
Getting clamped. Getting wired. All right. Getting all electrode.
The haggard man is strapped to the chair. Brutal faces him. Paul and Dean move to the right.
Roll on one.
Roll on one means I turn the generator up full. You'll see the lights go brighter than half the prison.
All a bit of buck. You've been condemned to die by a jury of your peers. Sentence imposed by a judge of good standing in this state.
You have anything to say before your sentence is carried out?
Yeah. Home to fried chicken dinner with gravy on the taters.
Harry?
Harry nods. Brutal dips a yellow sponge into a bucket.
Soak the sponge.
Harry drapes a black hood over the man's head.
Putting on the black hood.
They place the sponge, then a leather and steel cap on his head.
I'm putting on my cap.
Why is he putting that sponge on his head?
Conducts electricity directly to the brain, fast like a bullet. You don't ever throw the switch on a man without that.
Hush up there, too.
Harry connects a cable to the cap and tightens a wing nut.
Getting screwed. Mind getting kept.
All in Bitterbuck. Your electricity shall not be passed through your body until you are dead, in accordance with state law. God have mercy on your soul.
Amen.
Paul bows his head.
Roll on two.
Behind the partition, the stony-faced guard, Van Hay, points at the switch.
And that's it.
Paul shakes his head. Brutal grins, then nods his head.
One of the witnesses showed up a day early.
Paul turns. The mouse crawls along a wooden beam and into a pipe on a wall.
Goodbye.
All right, let's do it again. Get that idiot out of the chair.
The guards unstrap Toot. Later, in the same room, Dean sweeps the floor while others set up rows of chairs. The execution chamber is dim. Now, men wearing suits fill some of the seats. Other people continue to arrive. In a cell, Dean scrapes a razor across the top of Bitterbuck's scalp. His remaining hair, parted down the middle, hangs to the side of both eyes. Bitterbuck sits motionless, staring blankly straight ahead. In front of them, Paul sits observing. Dean wipes the bald spot and stops. Paul nods, and Dean leaves the cell. Bitterbuck sits placidly. He reaches up his handcuffed hands and caresses his bald spot. Paul watches him, then winces and looks down a moment.
You think if a man sincerely repents on what he'd done wrong, that he might get to go back to the time that was happiest for him and live there forever? Could that be what heaven's like?
I just about believe that very thing.
Had me a young wife when I was 18. Spent our first summer in the mountains. Made love every night. And she'd lie there after. And we'd talk sometimes till the sun come up. That was my best time.
For the first time, Bitterbuck looks at Paul. Brutal walks outside the cell and holds out his gold pocket watch. Paul nods, then looks back to Bitterbuck. Bitterbuck clenches his jaw and swallows. He takes a deep breath.
You'll be fine.
Paul nods.
You'll be fine.
The execution chamber. A crouching man wets a yellow sponge in a bucket. As he stands, water dribbles on the wooden floorboards. He places the sponge on top of Bitterbuck's hooded head. Harry sets the steel cap over the sponge and secures it to his scalp. Water drips down Bitterbuck's nose, the only flesh exposed through the black hood. A leather strap is fastened under his chin. Paul stands watching. Harry tightens the wing nut and nods. Brutal nods, then faces forward.
All in Bitterbuck. Electricity shall not be passed through your body until you are dead. In accordance with state law, God have mercy on your soul.
Brutal looks toward a clock on the wall. It is 10 seconds to 10. Van Hay waits behind the dark partition with Percy. Percy stares out through a grating. 2 seconds to 10. 1, 10 o'clock.
Roll on, 2.
Van Hay flips a lever. Bitterbuck bucks against the restraints. Van Hay pulls the lever down. Now, Percy pats Bitterbuck's corpse.
Adios, Chief. Drive us a card from hell. Let us know if it's hot enough.
From behind, Brutal grabs Percy's arm and spins him around.
He's paid what he owed. He's square with the house again. So keep off him.
Percy yanks his arm free and stumbles backward. Brutal pulls a white sheet over Bitterbuck's face and pushes him down a corridor on a gurney. Percy stands beside Paul and looks down the arched brick corridor.
What's up his hatch?
You. Always you, Percy.
Oh, you gotta hate me, boy. That's the way it is around here.
Why don't you just move on? Take that job at Briarridge.
Percy stands open mouthed.
Oh, yeah. I know all about it. Sounds to me like a pretty good job.
I might just take it, too, as soon as you put me out front. Yeah, you heard me. I want Brutal spot for the next execution.
Paul shakes his head, then picks up a toolbox.
Seeing a man die, that's not enough. You gotta be close enough to smell his guts cook.
I just want to be out front, is all. Come on. One time. And then you know what? You be rid of me. I swear.
And if I say no?
Well, I might just stick around for good. Make me a career of this. Boss.
Paul shakes his head and walks away. Percy watches him go.
Sometimes I wonder.
Paul sits at his desk, bathed in white sunlight streaming through an arched window. Meanwhile, Coffee lies in bed. His face is contorted and his lip quivers. Coffee lifts his head from his pillow. At the desk, Paul stops writing and glances up.
Well, I am once again with you. When I love...
Paul turns off the radio. Paul opens an office door.
You are not going to believe this.
Brutal and Dean get up and follow Paul. The guards arrive outside Delacroix's cell. The mouse sits on Delacroix's shoulder.
Look. A timid mouse.
We see that.
Watch this. Watch what he do.
Del holds out his hands. The mouse runs across Del's outstretched arms. Paul nods toward Brutal.
Ain't he something now? He's smart, Mr. Jangles.
Mr. Jangles?
That is name he was put in my ear. Hey, Captain, could I have a box for my mouse so he can sleep in there with me?
I notice your English gets better when you want something.
Want to see what else he can do? Watch. Mr. Jingle. Want to play fetch? Watch.
Del lays the mouse on the floor, then tosses an empty thread spool. The animal races to it, then rolls it back toward Del like a barrel. The guards watch as the mouse rolls the spool to Del's boot.
He fetch it every time. Every time.
That's so smart, Mouse Del. Like he a circus mouse or something.
Correct. That's just what he is, too. He's a circus mouse. And when I get out of here, he's going to make me rich. You just watch it. See if you don't do that. We play fetch again?
Percy approaches.
Well. Looks like you found yourself a new friend there, Del.
Don't hate him. Okay?
The one I chase?
Yeah, that's the one. Only Del says his name is Mr. Jingles.
Is that so?
Del's been asking for a box. Thinks the mouse will sleep in it, I guess. Might keep it for a pet.
Percy nods.
What do you think?
You know what? We ought to find a cigar box and get some cotton batting from the dispensary to line it with.
Paul raises an eyebrow.
Yeah, that should do real nice.
Percy nods and walks away. Paul, Brutal, and Dean turn as he strolls down the mile. Paul stands with his arms folded over his chest.
Man said get a cigar box.
Now, Paul passes a woman at a desk.
Mom?
Paul enters the warden's office. Hal stands at the window. He turns to Paul.
Hal, you want to see me?
Yeah. Close the door.
Hal puts his glasses on and moves to his desk. He picks up a clipboard.
So you know, you got a new prisoner coming in here tomorrow. William Fulton. It's what you call a problem child. Got Billy the Kid tattooed on his left arm. Been rambling all over the state the last few years, causing all kinds of trouble. Finally hit the big time. Killed three people in a holdup. One of them a pregnant woman. Bad news all around.
Hal?
Hal removes his glasses and sits. He stares at the wall, his jaw muscles tensing. His eyes are red.
It's a tumor, Paul. A brain tumor. They got x-ray pictures of it. It's the size of a lemon, they said. And way down, deep inside, where they can't operate.
Paul looks down.
I haven't told her. I can't think how.
Hal shakes his head.
For the life of me, Paul, I can't think how to tell my wife. She's going to die.
Hal puts his hand over his eyes and sobs. Paul watches, his brow furrowed. Now in a darkened room, a blonde woman lies in bed. Behind her, Paul's eyes flutter and open. His blue pajama shirt is unbuttoned, and he wears a white undershirt beneath. He looks toward the ceiling and grimaces. His chest heaves. Throwing the sheet aside, Paul sits up in bed and puts his right foot on the floor. He holds both hands to his groin and winces. Now morning, the blonde woman pours coffee. Paul adjusts his tie.
What?
See Dr. Bishop. I'm going. Today. As soon as we get that new inmate squared away.
Not bad.
Oh, yeah.
Paul spreads jam on a piece of toast and bites it. Now a man's tattooed arm, a gun-toting cowgirl with a banner winding through her legs, Billy the Kid, William Wharton, with brown hair and sideburns, stands slack-jawed wearing a white hospital gown. A man in white leads Dean, Harry, and Percy into the room. Harry waves a hand in front of Wharton's face.
Boy is dope to the gill.
Dean snaps in front of Wharton's face. Wharton turns his head.
Dean, hand me them clothes.
Wharton stares at the ground, mouth agape.
William Wharton? Hey! You put on these clothes now, you hear?
Percy eyes Wharton up and down. Now a chain gang shuffles along a gravel road. The prison paddy wagon passes them. Inside, Harry and Dean sit on either side of the sedate Wharton, now wearing a black and white striped prisoner's uniform. At the mile, Paul slowly emerges from the WC. He grimaces as he shuts the door behind himself. Paul's forehead is shiny with sweat. Dell watches from his cell using a handheld mirror.
Boss, you don't look so good.
Paul stares toward Dell.
Look like you're running you a fever.
Paul shuffles toward the phone.
Boss, it's good. I needs to see you down here, boss.
Paul turns toward Coffee's cell.
I got things to tend to just now, John Coffee. You just stay still in your cell.
Paul stumbles toward the desk. He picks up the phone, lifts the earpiece to his head, and holds the mouthpiece in front of his chin.
E-block.
Outside, the paddy wagon stops and Percy climbs out. He opens the wagon's back doors. Dean and Harry lead Wharton out.
Come on, let's go.
Come on, look alive, big boy.
Wharton slumps. Dean pats his face and straightens him up. Percy pulls him toward E-block. Inside, Paul stands in the middle of the green corridor. Coffee grips the bars of his cell and leans forward.
Careful.
Paul, his eyes narrowed, turns toward Coffee.
Careful.
Step up. Step up.
Dean leads Wharton to E-Block's metal door. Percy stands behind. Wharton, spittle hanging from his lips, smiles. As the door opens, Wharton elbows Percy in the nose. Wharton wraps his chains around Dean's throat. He pushes Dean over a desk. Paul rushes forward. Percy and Harry run in as Wharton knees Paul in the groin. Paul crumples to the ground. Harry clamps his billy club over Wharton's windpipe. Wharton rears back and headbutts Harry, who falls away. Percy stands frozen by the door.
Where you go? Where you go?
Wharton swings Dean into Harry, sending Harry over the desk. Paul rises, clutching his gun.
This is the party there! This is the party!
Don't
stay here, you hear? Come on, shoot me!
Shoot up! Hit it, Percy!
Come on, Percy. Give me these limbs, dude.
Hit it, Percy!
We dance!
Stand up!
Come on, Percy! Hit
Wharton!
Warn me! Warn me now!
Warn
you! You warned me!
Brutal enters, grabs Percy's billy club and whacks Wharton on the head. Both Wharton and Dean fall to the floor. Paul lowers his gun. Brutal hunches over the fallen men. He tosses the club back to Percy.
Come on, Dean. Come on, get him. All right.
Brutal unwraps Wharton's arms from Dean's neck. He props up Dean and opens his collar. Dean clutches his throat.
See you coming. Come on, Wharton. I see you coming.
Harry sits up amid overturned furniture. His eyes are wide and his lips are bloody.
We thought he was doped. Didn't we all of us think he was doped?
You didn't ask. Well, I guess that's not a mistake you've been needing to make again anytime soon, is it?
Percy and Brutal carry Wharton's limp body into a cell and toss it onto a cot. They exit and close the door. Dean sits holding a rag against his forehead.
Come on, boy. Let's get you looked at.
Harry and Brutal lift Dean by the arms and help him away. Paul stands shaking as they leave. Paul sinks to his knees, holding his groin. He grimaces, then leans forward and holds the floor with his right hand. He slowly lowers himself onto the ground. He lies on his stomach.
Boss, I need to see you down here.
This is not a good time, John Coffey. Not a good time at all.
But I need to see you, boss. I need to talk to you.
Paul winces and eases his face away from the green tiled floor. He walks to Coffey's cell, stopping several feet from the bars. Paul looks up at the massive man.
Closer.
Boss, you know you ain't supposed to then.
Mind your business, Dale.
Paul shuffles closer to the bars of Coffey's cell.
What do you want, John Coffey?
Just to help.
Coffey pulls Paul against the cell's bar. Paul unsnaps his holster, but Coffey stays his hand. Coffey moves his hand over Paul's thigh. Coffey's lips quiver as his hand comes to rest on Paul's groin. Above them, the dim bulb in Coffey's cell begins to brighten. Dell turns toward them, his eyes widening. Paul's face shakes as the light bulb flares, then bursts. Paul grits his teeth and closes his eyes. Coffey releases Paul, who slides to his knees. Paul grips the cell's bars. He opens his eyes and blinks slowly.
Shut up!
Coffey sits on the cot in the dark cell, his chest heaving. His eyes wide, Paul grabs the bars of Coffey's cell and leans closer. Coffey squints and opens his mouth. A stream of dark specks flow from Coffey's mouth. They flutter about his cell like gnats and form a cloud above his head. Paul crouches, his eyes darting back and forth. The specks fade and disappear in tiny puffs. Coffey leans forward, gasping. He sinks onto his cot, panting in the darkness. Paul's face is slick with sweat. He stares with furrowed brow.
What did you just do to me?
I helped it. Didn't I help it? I just took it back, Saul. Awful tired now, boss. Dog tired.
Coffey turns toward the brick wall and lies down. Paul watches him through the bars, then slowly stands. Eyebrows knit, he blinks and staggers away from the cell.
Boss. What am I do to you?
Paul turns and steps away from Coffey's cell. At home, Paul enters and hangs up his jacket. His wife stands at the kitchen sink, her back to him. She wears a blue dress with a flower print and an apron. Paul leans against a post and watches her.
Hey, honey. How you feeling?
Oh, not too bad.
What did the doctors say?
She turns around. He looks at her.
Oh, you know, doctors. Gobbledygook, mostly.
Gobbledygook.
She turns back to the sink. Paul saunters over to her. He stands behind her and puts his hand on her shoulder.
Happens to tonight.
Paul's hand slides from her shoulder and grabs an apron string. He pulls one string, then the other. Frowning, she raises her head.
What are you doing?
She looks at him. He brushes her hair away from her ear and caresses her neck.
What does it feel like?
Well, I know what it feels like.
She closes her eyes as he nuzzles her neck. He strokes her chin.
It feels great.
He turns her and they embrace. Her hand goes to his shoulder. They kiss. From outside, an upstairs window at night. Now, on the mile, Dell lies on his cot with a weird magazine on his chest. He gets up and grasps the bars of his cell as Paul passes. Paul is carrying a package wrapped in a napkin.
Oh, me, oh my.
Mr. Jingle scurries from a cigar box to Dell's side.
John? John?
Coffey rolls away from the wall.
Smelling me some cornbread.
It's from my missus.
Coffey sits up and looks at the wrapped package.
She wanted to thank you.
Thank me for what?
Well, you know.
Paul glances toward Dell.
For helping me.
Helping you with what?
You know.
Paul looks down and wiggles his fingers near his groin.
Oh. Does your missus please?
Paul nods quickly, his eyebrows raised.
Several times.
He steps forward and puts the package between the bars. Coffey rises from his cot and steps toward the gift. Coffey takes the napkin and unfolds it. Inside are four large golden pieces of cornbread.
Oh, John, I smell that from over here. I surely can.
Coffey looks toward Dell.
Can I give Dell, Mr. Jangleson?
It's yours, John. You can do with it as you please.
Coffey passes two pieces of bread to Paul.
Here, this for Dell and Mr. Jangle.
Hey, what about me? I'm going to get some too, ain't I?
Coffey looks to Paul, eyebrows lowered.
It's yours, John. As you please.
I think I'll just keep the rest in.
Turning away, Coffey glares toward Wharton. Paul walks to Dell's cell and hands him the two pieces of cornbread.
Sure to see the gentleman across the way.
Mr. Jingle sniffs the air.
Oh, John, that's so very fine of you. I thank you. Mr. Jingle, thank you. My mama thank you, too, but she did.
Welcome.
Now, Harry walks down the corridor making notes. He glances toward Wharton's cell, then jumps back.
Yeah! Good shot, Wharton. Look on your face.
Paul and Brutal join Harry in front of Wharton's cell.
Son of a bitch pissed on me.
We've been meaning to clean out that room for a while, haven't we?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Hank! Be careful with that. That's fragile. Hey, listen now. Listen now, moving day. Y'all want to come on in here and dust a little?
Guards carry furniture out of the restraining room and down the corridor. Paul and Brutal stand outside Wharton's cell. Wharton backs away from the bars and pulls off his belt, winding it around his right fist.
You come in here on your legs, but you go out on your backs. Billy the Kid gonna guarantee you that.
Come on.
No sneaking up on me this time. We'll go man to man.
Brutal opens the cell door. Harry holds a fire hose.
Piss on me.
Harry turns on the hose. A blast of water pins Wharton against the far wall of his cell. Now Wharton, wrapped in a straitjacket, slides face down into the restraining room. Wharton throws himself at the padded door. The lights go out.
Hey, fellas.
Stop, buddy. You won't let
me. All I wanted me was a little cornbread, you mudsuckers. All I wanted me is a little cornbread.
Later, the door opens. Light falls on Wharton, who sits on the floor. He squints. Paul and Brutal stand in the doorway.
I'll learn my lesson. I'll be good.
Wharton nods. Now Mr. Jingles grooms himself on Dell's chest as Dell lies on his cot in his undershirt. Dell sits up, holding Mr. Jingles.
Hey, I'll grab a few things. It's a big day for you and Mr. Jingles.
What you talking about?
Important folks heard about your mouse. What's he here for? Not just prison guards, either. One's a politician all the way from the state capital, I believe.
Dressed, Dell leaves his cell.
You fellas coming?
No, we got other fish to fry just now, Dell. But you knock them for a loop, yeah?
You knock them for a loop, Dell. It's like Mr. Harris says.
Dell smiles. Brutal, carrying a cigar box, escorts him from the cell block. Percy closes the door behind them. Dean and Toot watch from the office.
All right, let's move briskly, folks. There's not much time.
All right, rehearsing now. Got them over out. Ain't got much time.
I've been fixing the plumbing here for 10 years. Ain't never had to wear no damn tie before.
Well, you're the VIP today, Earl, so just shut up. All right, everybody have a seat.
In a small room, men wearing suits and women wearing dresses settle into wooden chairs. Brutal escorts Dell inside, then reaches into the cigar box and lifts out Mr. Jingles by the tail. Dell takes Mr. Jingles in his hand.
This is great.
Now, standing behind the electric chair, Harry tightens a screw on the crown of the metal cap, then nods.
All right.
Percy nods.
Edouard Delacroix. Electricity shall now be passed through your body until you are dead, in accordance with state law. God have mercy on your soul.
Percy steps away from the chair. Paul stands behind him with his arms folded.
Roll on two.
Van Hay mimes lifting the lever on an electric generator.
That's set.
Percy glances behind him at Paul, who nods.
Very good.
professional.
Paul pats Percy on the back. Percy smiles. Now Brutal, carrying the cigar box, and Dell enter the mile.
So?
Oh, I love Mr. James. They laugh over there, they cheer, they clap their hands.
Well, that's just aces. Isn't that something? You done good, old-timer. We're happy for you. Yeah, we are.
Dell studies Percy. Dell glances at Brutal standing behind him, then smiles. Dell falls backward. Brutal glares at Percy.
Percy, you jerk.
Dell holds his head as Brutal hauls him to his feet.
Dell, get up.
Dell, you numbwit. I didn't mean nothing by it. I was just playing. I was just having...
Warden grabs Percy around the throat.
She's so Warden.
Soft like a girl.
Let him go. Warden!
Paul aims his gun at Warden, who releases Percy. Percy cowers against the opposite cell.
I let him go. I was just playing. I let him go. I think he's sweet on old Billy the Kid.
Oh, my God.
Look what a big man done. He busts out the people with a stick. Maybe some move like that. Somebody touch him. He may water in his pants like a little babe.
Brutal bangs on Dell's cell.
Dell, I'm going to shut up. All right now.
Paul reaches toward Percy.
Don't touch me.
Percy pushes Paul's hand away. Paul steps back. Percy straightens himself, then steps into the center of the corridor. He looks at Dean and Harry.
You talk about this to anyone, I get you all fired. I swear that to God.
What happens on a mile stays on a mile, always has.
Dean nods. Percy looks from one guard to another. Dell smirks in his cell.
Yeah. You keep laughing, you French fried maggot. You just keep on laughing.
One more good name for you. Where's Whitmore do a dance? Listen to him squishing in his pants.
Now Mr. Jingles rolls an empty thread spool across the floor.
Well, what about Dean? He's got a little boy. Love to have a pet mouse, I bet.
Now Paul sits on a chair in Dell's cell.
How could a boy be trusted, Mrs. Jingles? We forget to feed him. I keep up with this training. I mean, he's just a boy. That's fine, yeah?
Paul nods. Dell picks up the spool and tosses it into a corner. Mr. Jingles scampers after it.
All right. I'll take him then.
Merci beaucoup, thank you kindly, but you live out in the woods. Mr. Jingles, he'd be scared to live out in the big woods.
Paul looks up at Brutal, leaning in the open cell door.
How about Mouseville?
Mouseville?
Tourist attraction down in Florida. Tallahassee, I think. Is that right, Paul? Tallahassee?
Yeah. Tallahassee. It's just down the road a piece from the Dahl University.
You think it'd take Mr. James? You think he's got the stuff?
I mean, he is pretty smart.
What is mouth feel?
Tourist attraction, I said. They got this big tent you go into.
You have to pay?
Of course you pay. Dime a piece. 2 cents for the kids.
For the kids?
Inside the tent, they got this, Miles City, made out of all boxes and toilet paper rolls, little windows so you can look in. Plus, they got the Mouseville All-Star Circus. Yeah, there's mice that swing on trapeze. Mice that roll barrels. Mice that stack coins.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. That's the plate for Mr. Jenkins. Oh, you're going to be the sickest mouse at all. You're going to live in a mouse city down in Florida.
Dell tosses the spool. It bounces out of the cell.
Up to jail.
Mr. Jingle scampers across the corridor. Percy stomps his foot down, crushing him.
No! No! No!
Dell runs towards Percy, but Brutal locks him in his cell. Paul lifts his foot from the bloodied mouse.
You killed my mom.
Well, I knew I'd get him sooner or later. It's just a matter of time, really.
You cruel bastard!
Percy struts away down the corridor. Brutal stands beside Paul, watching him go. Dell leans against his cell. Coffee stretches out his hand.
Give him to me. Give him to me, might still be time.
Dean and Harry approach Paul and Brutal, where they stand over Mr. Jingles. Paul bends down. He scoops the dead mouse up in his hands and brings it to Coffee.
What are you doing? Paul? What the hell?
Please, John. Help him. Please, Johnny, help him.
Coffee lifts Mr. Jingles to his mouth and inhales.
Dear Jesus. The tail. Look at the tail.
Mr. Jingles' tail, hanging from between Coffee's fingers, twitches. A golden glow fills Coffee's cupped hands. It brightens, shining on the faces of the four guards gathered in front of Coffee's cell. Coffee's hands fill with white light. Dell watches, his face pressed against the bars. A flare of light bursts from Coffee's hands, and he jerks backwards. Coffee's head snaps back, and tiny black specks fly out of his mouth. They rise to the ceiling and drift out through the bars of Coffee's cell. Harry, Dean, Brutal, and Paul watch the particles hover over their heads, then fade away. They look back at Coffee, who smiles. Coffee bends down and releases Mr. Jingles. The mouse scurries past the guards, across the corridor, and into Dell's outstretched hands. Dell smiles as he cradles the mouse. Brow furrowed, Dean looks toward Coffee.
What'd you do?
I hit Dell's mouse. Your circus mouse. Gonna live in a mouse city down in Florida. Boss pussy bad. He mean. He step on Dale Mallows. I took it back to
Mousy.
Dell cuddles Mr. Jingles. Dean and Harry stare. Now Paul and Brutal leave Dean and Harry at Coffee's cell and march down the corridor. They walk down a hallway and enter the execution chamber. They stop on either side of Percy, who spit-shines the arm of the wooden electric chair. Paul folds his arms.
Now don't start in on me. You're just a mouse. Never belonged here in the first place.
Mouse is fine. Just fine. You're no better at mouse killing than you are at anything else around here.
Yeah, you expect me to believe that, huh? I heard the damn thing crunch.
Aren't you glad Mr. Jingles is okay? After all those talk we had about keeping the prisoners calm, aren't you relieved?
What kind of game is this?
It's no game. See for yourself.
Percy looks from Paul to Brutal.
Go on.
As Percy leaves the execution chamber, Paul and Brutal glance at one another. Brutal grins. Percy strides up to Dell's cell, where he stops and stares, slack-jawed.
Mm-hmm. Hard day, Mr. Jingle, said to you. Don't let nothing happen to Mr. Jingle.
Paul spins his club in the execution chamber. Percy returns.
He switched him somehow.
I always keep a spare mouse in my wallet for occasions such as this.
Oh, yeah, you playing with me, huh? Both of you. It's just who the hell you think you are, huh?
Brutal slams Percy into the electric chair.
With the people you work with, Percy. But not for long. Percy, I want your word.
My word?
I put you up front for Dell.
You put in your transfer to Briar Ridge the very next day.
Well, what if I just call up certain people and tell them you're harassing me, bullying me?
Go ahead. I promise you'll leave your share of blood on the floor.
Over a mouse?
No. But four men will swear you stood by while Wild Bill tried to strangle Dean to death. About that, people will care. Even your uncle, the governor, will care about that.
Thing like that goes on your work record. Work record can follow a man around for a long, long time.
I put you out front. You put in that transfer. That's the deal.
All right. All right.
Paul and Brutal straighten, releasing Percy. Paul holds out his hand.
You make a promise to a man, you shake his hand.
His chest heaving, Percy raises his hand. Paul pulls him, staggering, to his feet. Paul pumps Percy's hand twice and steps away with Brutal. Now, people file into the execution chamber. Lightning flashes, illuminating the room in brief intervals. Outside, lightning flashes over the prison's gothic facade. Rain splatters the puddles in front of E Block. Seated on the edge of his bunk, Dell places Mr. Jingles in his left hand and nuzzles it with the finger on his right. Smiling slightly, he watches the mouse as the light of a lightning strike flashes upon the bars behind him. Paul, Brutal, Harry, and Dean approach in the corridor. Brutal unlocks the cell and slides back the bars. Dell looks up at his visitors.
Hey, boy. Hey, Mr. Jingles.
He peers closely at the mouse.
Edouard Delacroix, will you step forward?
Carrying Mr. Jingles, Dell, his shoulders stooped, shuffles out of the cell. He halts in front of Paul.
Boss Ashman?
Yes, Dell.
Don't let nothing happen to Mr. Jingles, okay?
Paul nods.
Here. You take him.
Dell places Mr. Jingles on Paul's shoulder.
Dell? I can't have a mouse on my shoulder while you know.
I'll take him, boss. Just for now, if Dell don't mind.
Dell nods.
Yeah. Yeah, you take him, John. You take him till this foolish one be done.
Paul walks a few paces across the corridor to Coffee's cell. He turns his back to the bars, and Mr. Jingles runs off into Coffee's outstretched hand. Paul brushes his shoulder with a handkerchief. Dell looks up at Brutal, who towers over him.
You gonna take him to Florida to that mouthview?
We'll do it together, most likely. Maybe take a little vacation time.
People bear down, but pleased to see him. Too sad for the kids. Ain't that right, Boss Al?
That's right, Dell.
You're a good man, Boss Al.
Dell turns to Paul.
You too, boss. I sure wish I could have met you guys someplace else.
Coffee cradles Mr. Jingles by his cell door. Paul places his hand on Dell's shoulder. The guards form a tight cordon around Dell, two on each side and two behind, and lead him down the green mile. Lightning crashes, throwing long shadows from the cell bars across the corridor. Spectators pack the execution chamber and fan themselves. The electric chair, bathed in a halo of light, sits empty at the far end of the dimly lit room. Water drips onto an overhead rafter. The guards lead Dell into the chamber. Standing beside the electric chair, Percy watches. Dell closes his eyes. Paul lays his hand across Dell's shoulder.
Dell, it's all right.
He guides Dell to the chair. Percy stares at them. Paul and a guard lift Dell into the chair while two other guards kneel at his feet. Percy places his pistol into its holster and snaps it shut. In unison, the guards strapped down Dell's legs and arms. The guards step away. Percy tightens a strap and walks in front of Dell. He looks across the room toward Van Hay, who sits behind the partition.
Roll on one.
Van Hay twists the dial. Lights over the control board brighten. The dark-haired woman in the audience stiffens. In Wharton's cell, a bulb hums overhead. Coffee cradles Mr. Jingles.
You be still, Mr. Jingles. You be so quiet, so still.
Percy, his hands crossed in front of him, faces Dell.
Edouard Delacroix, you've been condemned to die by a jury of your peers. Sentence imposed by a judge in good standing in this state. You have anything to say before sentence is carried out?
Head lowered. Dell sobs.
I'm sorry for it. I'm sorry for what I do. I give anything to take it back. But I can't. God have mercy on me. This is what I'm in.
Paul nods to Harry, who moves behind the chair. Dell raises his head.
Don't forget about Malfio.
Paul nods.
Hey. There's no such place. That's just a fairy tale these guys told you to keep you quiet. Just thought you should know.
Harry tightens his mouth and looks away. Percy helps him place the black hood over Dell's head. Percy walks to a bucket of water and picks up a yellow sponge. Kneeling, he holds the sponge over the pail. Percy looks around himself, then stands. Moving slowly, he places the dry sponge on the top of Dell's head. Percy and Harry strap a cup-shaped metal cap over the sponge. Percy tightens the cap's leather straps under Dell's chin. Percy steps back. Harry nods, then walks to the side of the chair. Percy stands facing Dell.
Edouard Delacroix, electricity shall now be passed through your body until you are dead, in accordance with state law. God have mercy on your soul.
A clock on the wall, 18 seconds to 10 o'clock. Paul stares at the pail of water. He turns his head and furrows his brow. His eyes travel from the pail to Dell sitting in the chair, tracing a line along the dry wooden floor. Percy stands staring. The second hand ticks toward the top of the hour, 10 o'clock.
Roll on two.
Van Hay flips a lever. A spark arcs from the control board. Dell jerks violently in the chair. Coffee does the same in his cell. Wharton rattles his cell door bars.
Sponge is dry.
Paul strides toward the partition. Brutal grabs him.
Sponge is dry. Don't you stop it. Don't you do it. It's too late for that.
He's cooking that. I cook it again. Live about done, I reckon.
A flash of light explodes from Coffee's shaking hands. He drops Mr. Jingles.
We're gonna have him hung down.
Wharton hammers on his cell bars. Mr. Jingles scampers under a door. Coffee screams.
He's cooking that.
10st Coffee shakes. Light bulbs over the Green Mile explode. In the execution chamber, people dash from their seats. Percy places his hand over his mouth. The audience topples chairs and mobs the doorway. In his cell, Wharton swings from an overhead grating.
He's flying now.
Hal runs to Paul.
Why don't you shut it down?
He's still alive. You want me to shut down while he's still alive?
Over his mouth, Percy turns away. Paul grabs him by the shoulders.
You watch, you son of a bitch!
He spins Percy around.
All right, folks! It's all under control!
Kill it!
Van Hay slams down the lever. Brutal thrusts a fire extinguisher into Percy's arms.
You do it.
You're running this show, ain't you?
Paul shoves Percy forward, cringing. Percy sprays the fire extinguisher. No! In the prison morgue, Brutal pulls a sheet over a body. He glares at Percy.
I didn't know the sponge is supposed to be wet.
Brutal punches him. Ah! Pulls him away.
No!
What do you mean, no? How can you say no? You saw what he did.
Delacroix's dead. Now, there's nothing can change that, and Percy is not worth it.
So he just gets away with it. Is that how it works?
Hal runs down the stairs into the room. He places his hands on his hips.
What in the Sam Hill was that?
Jeez Louise. There's puke all over the floor up there. And the smell. I got Van Hayt open both doors, but that smell won't go out for 5 damn years. That's what I'm betting.
Percy holds a handkerchief to his bloody lip. Hal steps forward.
Now, what in the hell happened?
An execution. A successful one.
Can you call that a success?
Edouard Delacroix is dead. Isn't he?
Paul turns toward Percy, who looks down.
Percy? Something to say?
I didn't know the sponge was supposed to be wet.
Percy fouled up, Hal.
Pure and simple. That's your official position?
Don't you think it should be? He's putting in a transfer request to Briarridge tomorrow. Moving on to bigger and better things. Is that right, Percy?
Yeah.
Did you ever see a dream walking while I do?
Daytime. Paul and his wife drive down a rolling country road. They pull into the driveway of a large home with 3 two-story high pillars framing the front porch. Paul comes to a stop.
I hate this.
Hal, wearing suspenders and a tie, waves from the yard. Leaving the car, they hurry to a woman in a shawl, her face drawn, eyes sunken, seated under a parasol. Jan kneels in front of her. Paul stands alongside.
Well, I do.
Melinda. Hi.
Did you ever see a dream romancing?
I'm so happy to see you.
Oh. Look at
did
you.
Did you ever find heaven right here?
Well, we missed you at the church.
Saying I love you, I do.
No.
Later, Hal stands with Paul at a grill.
Just having one of her good days. I thank God for that.
Hal drinks from a beer bottle.
What's a bad day?
Hal glances at Paul, then sets down the bottle.
Sometimes she's not herself anymore. She swears.
She swears?
Just pops out. Most awful language you can imagine. She doesn't even know she's doing it. I didn't know she'd ever heard words like that. To hear her say them in her sweet voice.
Biting his lip, Hal looks down. He turns to Paul.
I'm glad she's having a good day, Paul. I'm glad for you and Jan.
Now, Harry, Brutal, and Dean join Paul and Jan at a table outside.
You sure do know how to cook chicken.
Well, thank you.
This is one delicious treat, ma'am, before I go to work.
Well, I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Hey, Brutal? You gonna hog all them taters?
Yes, I am. Harry, you want some potatoes?
Come on, now.
What?
No, pretty soon we'll just see your feet sticking out of there, Brutus.
Yeah. Y'all saw what he did to the mouse.
I could have gone the rest of the day without you bringing that up.
I could have gone the rest of the year.
He did the same thing to me. He put his hands on me. He took my blood infection away.
Jan looks at Brutal, who frowns. Jan shrugs.
It's true. When he came home that day, he was all better.
She bites her lip.
Oh, now, wait. You're talking about an authentic healing, a miracle?
I am.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if you say it, I accept it.
Harry nods.
What's it got to do with us?
You're thinking about Melinda.
Melinda? Melinda Moores?
Yeah, so, Paul, you really think you can help?
It's not a bladder infection, or even a busted mouse. I think there might be a chance.
Hold on now. You're talking about our jobs. Sneak a sick woman into a sailboat?
Oh, no, 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 no. Hal would never stand for that. You know him. He wouldn't believe anything if it fell on him.
So you're talking about taking John Coffey to hurt?
Paul nods. Brutal raises his eyebrows.
That's more than just our jobs, Paul. That's prison time when you get caught.
You're dang right it is.
No, not for you, Dean. See now, the way I figure it, you stay back on the mile. That way you can deny everything.
Why do I have to stay behind?
Well, our boys have grown up. Gone off to school. Harry's girls. They all married now. Brutal's a single man. You're the only one here with two children. Another one on the way.
But let's not discuss this as if we're thinking of doing it.
Paul stares at Harry.
Brutal, help me out here.
I'm sure she's a fine woman.
The finest.
What is happening to her is an offense, Brutal. To the eye and the ear and to the heart.
I have no doubt. But we don't know her like you and Jan do we?
And let's not forget, John Coffey is a murderer. What if he escapes? I'd hate to lose my job or go to prison. But I hate worse to have a dead child on my conscience.
I don't think that's going to happen. In fact, I don't think he did it at all.
Brutal straightens. Dean furrows his brow.
I do not see God putting a gift like that in the hands of a man to kill a child.
Well, that's a very tender notion, but the man is on death row for the crime. And plus, he's huge. If he tried to get away, it'd take a lot of bullets to stop him.
Oh, we'd all have shotguns, in addition to sidearms. I'd insist on that. If he tried anything at all, we'd have to take him down. Understand?
Brutal raises his eyebrows and nods. Paul glances to Dean, nods. Brutal looks toward Harry, then lowers his head.
Tell us what you have in mind.
Brutal smiles. Now, in E Block, Paul and Brutal stroll down a corridor carrying soda bottles. Paul picks up a tin cup and blows in it. Dean and Harry sit at a desk.
Thirsty? Smash out of the icebox.
Swell, Brutal. Thanks.
Oh, yeah.
Hot in here.
Boy, howdy. Hey. I'm going to get some, too, ain't I? The heck you'll get some, too.
What makes you think you deserve any?
Well, the day report says he's been okay. Hell yeah, I've been behaved. Come on now. Don't be stingy hogs.
Paul looks at Brutal.
Come on. Come on now, fellas.
Paul and Brutal turn their backs to Wharton. Paul pours a packet of white powder into the tin cup. Coffey looks out of his cell.
It's hot in here. Caught this cell now. Y'all get to drink. I'm thirsty. Let's give me some.
Brutal pours soda in the tin cup. Paul shakes it and carries it down the mile. The other guards watch.
Come on.
Paul stops at Wharton's cell. Wharton dangles his arms through the bars.
You gonna stay behind?
Come on, crank him in here.
You promised me. Or else I'll drink this myself right here in front of you.
Come on now, don't be that way. I'll be good.
Paul tilts his head, then hands Wharton the cup. Smirking, Wharton pulls it into his cell, backs up, and lifts the cup to his lips. He stares at Paul as he drinks. At the desk, Dean and Harry lay down playing cards and watch Wharton and Paul. Wharton drains the cup. Wharton tosses the cup and catches it. He hands it through the bars. Paul returns to the desk, displaying the empty cup to Harry and Dean. Wharton watches through the bars, then steps away. Paul sits on the edge of the desk and drinks from a soda bottle. Brutal leans against the desk, his arms folded across his chest. Now Wharton, his mouth open, sits swaying on the edge of his cot. His eyes roll back in his head. He leans to one side, then he collapses onto the cot. Paul, Brutal, Dean, and Harry stop outside Wharton's cell and look in at him.
Anybody wants out, now's the time. After this, there's no turning back. So,
gonna do this.
So, that'd be just fine. I'd like to take a ride.
They turn toward Coffee, who grips his cell bars. A shadow covers his eyes.
Guess we're all in.
Now, Percy reads in the office. Paul, Harry, and Brutal enter and surround Percy.
What is this?
Paul holds a straitjacket.
Payback.
That's right.
Percy jumps across the desk.
No!
Harry slams him into Brutal.
Let go! Let go! Let go!
Settle down.
What are you doing?
Settle down.
Percy, stick out your arms like a good lad.
No, I won't do it. You can't make me.
Oh, you're dead wrong about that, you know.
Brutal grabs Percy's ears.
A big man is ripping your ears off, Percy. I do as he says. There you go.
Percy puts his arms up, and Paul and Harry slide the straitjacket over them. Harry and Brutal fasten the leather straps.
Oh, please, Paul. Please don't put me in with Wild Bill. Please don't.
You wouldn't think that.
They take Percy to the restraint room.
No, 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 you can't do this. You can't do this.
You in on a little secret, Percy. We can. We are.
Brutal stuffs a rag in Percy's mouth, and Paul sticks tape over it. They shove Percy into the cell.
Let me give you a few hours of quiet time, Percy, so you can reflect.
Now Paul passes shotguns to Brutal and Harry.
Let's go over one more time. What do you say if somebody stops by?
They march down the mile with Dean.
Coffee got upset just after the lights out, so we put the coat on him, locked him in the restraint room. They hear any kicking and fussing in there, they think it's him.
What about me?
You're down an admin, pulling Dell's file, going over the witnesses on account of how big a screw-up the execution was.
Dean unlocks and opens Coffee's cell door.
We going for the ride now?
That's right. We going for the ride.
Coffee leaves his cell.
What about us, Dean?
You, Harry, Percy, all down in the laundry doing your wash. I'll take y'all a few hours before you back.
Wharton grabs Coffee's arm.
Where you think you going?
Coffee's lips quiver. Coffee winces and trembles. Wharton grins up at him.
You're a bad man.
As bad as you want.
Paul stares as Wharton squeezes Coffee's arm. Wharton's arm shakes and Coffee's head jerks back.
What's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong?
A light bulb explodes. Sparks and glass fall to the floor. Paul looks at Wharton, then pulls Wharton's hand from Coffee's arm. Wharton teeters back.
Woo! Hollering, hollering, spinning. Have me some shiner. Here's what. It's all the hell their own electric chair. White man. All the hell to sit in no nigga electric chair. Closer.
Wharton falls onto his cot. Coffee's lips shake and his eyes water.
You're bad man.
Coffee and the guards walk through a foggy woods. Paul and Harry carry flashlights and use them to clear branches covering a pickup truck. Paul climbs in the bed and pulls branches off the roof. Harry opens the door and climbs in the driver's seat. Paul helps Coffee into the truck bed. Brutal climbs up after him. They sit.
John, you know where we're taking you tonight?
Coffee looks toward Paul, his brow furrowed.
Hippolyte?
That's right. But how do you know?
Don't know. Tell the truth, boss. I don't know much of anything. I never have.
Brutal nods. Paul knocks on the truck roof. Harry shifts the truck into gear and drives down a dirt path. Now they drive up a gravel road toward the warden's house. The light shines in a downstairs window. Harry stops. Coffee looks over his shoulder at the house, resting his arm on the truck roof. Brutal, Paul, and Coffee stare at the house.
What
they can still turn back.
Lights turn on upstairs.
Boss, look. Someone's up.
This is a mistake. Now, Paul, what were we thinking?
Too late now. John, you stay.
Holding their shotguns, Paul and Brutal jump out of the truck.
Harry, you keep John here till we call you.
Coffee stands and Harry gets out of the truck. Wearing a robe and pajamas, Hal opens the door. Hal aims a double-barreled shotgun.
Who the heck goes there at 2:30 in the damn morning?
It's us. It's Hal and Brutal. It's us.
It isn't a lockdown, is it? All right.
No. Hal, for God's sakes, just take your finger off the trigger.
Are you hostages? Who's out there? Who's by that truck?
Harry, the lights.
Harry turns off the truck's headlights. Coffee walks up behind them.
John Coffee.
Hal raises his gun.
Halt!
Hal?
You stay right where you are.
Relax. Now take it easy now.
Don't you move.
Wait. John.
I'm warning you.
No, wait. Hal, listen
Hall
to me.
Right there, I shoot. I said halt.
Hal, put the gun down.
Halt!
Hal!
Help! Help! Who are you talking to down there?
Hal, now nobody is hurt. We are here to help.
Help what? I don't understand.
You're just gonna have to trust me.
Coffee passes Paul and strides toward the house. He steps onto the porch. Hal lowers his gun and stares at Coffee's hulking body. Coffee grasps the barrels of Hal's shotgun with both hands.
What do you want?
Help! Make them go away! I don't want no salesmen in the middle of the night!
To help. Just to help, boss. That's all. You can't. No one can.
Coffee lifts Hal's gun away and hands it to Paul. Then he steps past Hal into the house.
Get out of here.
Don't you go in there. Don't you do it.
Help. I'm not your actual visitor.
You stop now. You hear me? Paul, I don't want him up there.
Boss, you just be quiet now.
Paul and Brutal hold Hal back as Coffee climbs the stairs.
No. 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 No.
Coffee peers through a partially open door at Melinda, who lies in a bed. She slowly turns her head toward him. He pushes the door open. Sweat streams down his face. He ducks through the door. Melinda wears a white nightgown. Her stringy hair hangs over her shoulders, and dark red circles surround her drooping eyes. She rubs her legs against the bed. Coffee steps closer, and Brutal and Paul follow.
All right, Hal. It's all right. Now watch. Just watch him.
Hal backs further into the room.
Don't come near me, big fella.
Coffee sits on the edge of the bed and looks down at Melinda's sweating, hollowed face. Hal watches them.
Why do you have so many scars? Who hurt you so badly?
Huh? Don't hardly remember, ma'am. Ma'am.
Coffee leans toward her.
I see it.
Hal covers his mouth with his hand.
What?
Shh, you be still. You be so quiet, so still.
Coffee leans over her, covering her face with his. Hal stares with his hand over his mouth, tears in his eyes. He lowers his hand. Coffee kisses Melinda's forehead, then he kisses her mouth. Hal turns his head as the light over the bed brightens. Coffee lifts his head and golden light rises from her mouth into his. The light illuminates Brutal, Paul, and Harry. Hal's mouth hangs open. Downstairs, a grandfather clock's pendulum swings. It stops. The glass over the face of the clock shatters. The house shakes and the men balance themselves. Plaster falls from the ceiling and the light swings. More light soars into Coffee's mouth until he shuts it and swallows. Paul steps toward the bed. Coffee pulls away and Melinda's now silky clean hair fans around her smooth, unblemished face. Hal stares at her. Paul steps toward her, then turns his head toward Coffee. Coffee kneels on all fours.
Come on, John. Stick it up. Come on. Pop it out like you've done before.
Oh, he's choking. Whatever he sucked out of her, he's choking on it.
John.
I'll be fine. Just let me be.
Hal sits on the bed and holds Melinda's hand. She looks up at him and he breathes heavily. Hal smiles.
We were going to the hospital in Vicksburg, remember?
Shh. Ellie, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter anymore.
Did I have the x-ray? Did I?
Yes. Yes. It was clear. There was no tumor.
Crying, Hal buries his face in Melinda's shoulder. She caresses the nape of his neck.
John, can you stand up? Can you turn around and see this lady?
Brutal helps Coffee stand. Leaning on Brutal, Coffee turns toward the bed. Brutal holds onto Coffee's arm.
What's your name?
John Coffee, ma'am.
Melinda swings her legs off the bed.
No, you can't.
She clasps Paul's hand. Hal steadies her elbow as she rises. She strokes her hair and walks forward with Paul behind her. Hal watches her with furrowed brow. With small steps, she approaches Coffee and gazes up at him. Brutal watches her while he gently holds Coffee's arm.
I dreamed of you.
Coffee's sealed lips quiver.
I dreamed you were wandering in the dark, and so was I. And we found each other. We found each other in the dark.
Melinda lowers her head and reaches behind her neck. She unfastens a necklace. After examining it briefly, she raises her head and with teary eyes holds it up. Coffee glances at Paul, who grins and nods slightly.
Take it, John. It's a present.
It's St. Christopher. I want you to have it, Mr. Coffee. And wear it. He'll keep you safe. Please, wear it for me.
Coffee bends his head low, and Melinda hangs the necklace around his neck. She places her palms on the sides of his bald head, then touches his cheeks.
Thank you, ma'am.
Melinda smiles faintly.
Thank you, John.
Melinda reaches up toward Coffee. They embrace. Back inside the prison, Coffee staggers between Paul and Brutal with his arms draped over their shoulders. Dean hurries toward them.
Oh, boy, my happiness to you fellas. You've gone so long while just making noise like he's gonna wake up. What the hell happened to him?
He's hurting, Dean. He's hurting bad.
Paul and Brutal help Coffee into his cell.
Okay, John. We're gonna sit down on your bed now. Here we go.
Paul and Brutal release Coffee. He falls back onto his cot and rolls onto his side, facing the brick wall. Brutal and Paul exit the cell as Dean closes the door behind them. Paul dabs his face with a purple handkerchief.
What about Mrs. Morse?
Dean looks around at each man.
Was it like the mouse? Was it...
Lines crease Dean's forehead.
You know, a miracle.
Yes.
Paul, Brutal, and Harry nod.
Yes, it was.
Percy, sitting against the wall in his dark cell, raises his head as the door opens. Paul turns on the lights. Percy blinks and bows his head. Paul and Brutal crouch in front of him.
Now, I want to talk, not shout. I take that tape off. You're gonna be calm.
Percy, mouth taped shut, nods.
Mother always said you do it fast, it won't hurt so much.
Percy grimaces as Paul yanks the tape.
She was wrong.
Brutal pulls a handkerchief out of Percy's mouth.
Let me out of this nut coat.
In a minute.
Now. Right now. I want out now!
Percy falls over as Paul slaps his cheek. Brutal props him up.
Shut up and listen. Now, you deserve to be punished for what you did to Dale. You accepted like a man. Or else we'll make you sorry you were ever born. We'll tell people how you sabotaged Dale's execution.
Sabotaged?
How you pissed yourself like a frightened little girl. Oh, yes, yeah, we will talk. But, Percy, you mind me now. We'll also see you beaten within an inch of your life. We know people, too. Are you so foolish you don't realize that?
Percy frowns.
Let bygones be bygones, Nothing's hurt so far but your pride. No one ever need know about that except the people in this little room.
What happens on a mile stays on a mile. Always has.
Percy closes his eyes and grinds his jaw. A tear falls.
May I be let out of this coat now?
Paul gives a tight-lipped smile. Brutal helps him raise Percy. From top to bottom, Brutal unfastens the straps on the straitjacket. Paul removes the coat and spins Percy. Stiffening, Percy yanks his shoulder away. He straightens his jacket and runs his hands back over his forehead and through his hair.
My thanks.
Harry hands Percy his belt.
Think it over, Percy. Oh, I intend to. I intend to think it over very hard. Starting right now.
Dean frowns while Percy steps forward and fastens his belt around his waist. Brutal and Paul stand in the back of the cell.
We'll talk. Sooner or later.
Paul nods slowly. Percy straightens his tie in front of a cell. Percy turns his head. Coffee thrusts his arm through the cell bars and grabs his throat. Guards rush toward them. Coffee scowls as he squeezes his hand around Percy's neck.
No, John, no! Back off! John, stop! Stop it, John! Back up! John, let him go!
Percy raises his billy club. Coffee grabs Percy's wrist and pushes it down. Coffee opens his mouth wide. Coffee leans forward as he pulls Percy up against the cell bars. Lowering his head, he moves closer until his nose touches Percy's. Paul and Brutal back away. Percy trembles. His eyes widen, then roll back in his head. A stream of small dark particles fly straight from Coffee's mouth into Percy's mouth. Coffee's head jerks abruptly. Percy's eyes roll down. Coffee releases Percy's wrist. As Percy brings his arm down, he loosens his grip on the billy club. It slides from his hand. Percy steps back, clutching his throat. With his mouth open and his eyes shut, Coffee slumps onto the floor of his cell. Jaw slack, Percy stares at the cell as he paces backward.
Easy now. Easy. Easy.
Percy stares.
Hey.
Paul snaps his fingers. He waves a hand, pats Percy's cheek.
Percy.
Percy blinks. He turns toward Paul.
Are you all right?
Paul scans Percy's face. Percy, staring vacantly, gently pushes Paul aside. He shuffles past the other guards and walks down the mile. On a cot in his cell, Wharton swings his legs to the floor. He sits holding his forehead. Percy stops outside Wharton's cell. Percy rotates his head sideways and stares at Wharton. Wharton drops his hand from his forehead and wrinkles his nose.
Boy, what you looking at?
Percy stares into the cell. Wharton rises with a swagger.
What you looking at, you lamp noodle?
Two teardrops, one from each eye, stream down Percy's cheeks. Squinting, Wharton tilts his head. Percy pulls out his pistol. Percy fires into Wharton's cell. The other guards tackle Percy to the ground. A bloody Wharton slumps to the floor. Dean grabs Percy's gun and empties its bullets.
No, no, no. Oh, no.
Flat on his back, Percy convulses and opens his mouth wide. Dark particles fly out of his mouth and swarm into the air. Crouched over Percy, Brutal, Paul, and Harry stare at the particles as they move higher, then dissipate. Leaning against the bars of his cell door, Coffee breathes heavily. Percy lies motionless on the ground, mouth agape. Paul stares upward, then lowers his eyes. He stands and looks toward Wharton's cell. Brutal and Harry watch as Paul strides down to Coffee's cell. Coffee sits with his head poking through two of the cell bars. He clutches one bar with his arm.
I punished them bad men. I punished them both.
Why? Why Wild Bill?
I saw in his heart when he grabbed my arm. I saw what Wild Billy done. Saw plain as day. You can't have what's in your heart.
What?
Paul kneels, his eyes narrow.
You saw what?
Grinding his jaw, Coffee reaches through the bars.
Take my hand, boss. You see for yourself.
Paul glances at Coffee's hand.
Huh? No.
Brutal shakes his head. Coffee's eyes are moist as he bows his head.
Please.
Staring at Coffee's hand, Paul inches his own hand closer. Coffee clasps it firmly.
No.
Paul's forehead wrinkles.
No, please.
I got to, boss. I got to give you a little bit of myself.
Paul's eyes water.
A gift. A gift of what's inside of me so you can see for yourself.
Paul trembles as his eyes narrow. Suddenly, his head thrusts backwards. A flash of white light. The feet of a young girl jump rope in green grass. Paul's body shakes. A light bulb explodes in the hallway. Another flash of white light. Two young blonde girls jump rope, facing each other. More lights spark on the mile. Brutal mouths Paul. Now indoors, an unshaven man in overalls passes a plate of bread rolls to one of the little girls. Streams of thick red liquid trickle down a wooden surface. The young girls jump rope again. A brush paints the wooden surface bright red. Indoors, the girl passes the plate to the other little girl. A long table is covered with bowls and dishes of food. The unshaven man hammers a nail.
Wow.
On a porch, a woman in an apron.
Supper time! Bring the girls!
Klaus climbs down a ladder.
Girls! You heard your mama!
Waving their arms, the blonde girls run in the grass as their jump ropes dangle behind them. A man with a large tattoo on the side of his arm holds the paintbrush, Wharton. He smiles and wipes his nose as the girls pass. Paul's head shakes. Wharton grins as the girls scamper away. Paul scrunches his eyes.
Come on, Billy. I worked you enough for one day. Come get you some supper.
Klaus follows the girls into the house as Wharton smiles. At the table, the younger girl passes the plate of rolls to Wharton. Paul's grimacing face tightens. Now, nighttime. Wharton uses a knife with a long blade to rip the netting in a screen door. His hand reaches inside and unlocks it. Toy blocks and a doll are scattered on the floor. Wharton steps inside. Paul sobs and his body rocks back. Wharton presses his finger to his lips. On the mile, Paul twitches. Sweating and clenching his teeth, Coffee releases his hand. Paul leans back. Paul's eyes open slowly. Shaking, he looks at Coffee.
He killed them with their love. They love each other. Now you see how it is. That's the way it is every day. That's the way it is. All over the world.
Tears run down Paul's cheeks as he blinks rapidly. Paul shakes his head.
Percy Wetmore. Percy Wetmore.
Son, can you hear me? Speak up if you can hear us.
I think this boy's cheese slid off his cracker.
Uniformed guards kneel over Percy.
Percy, I don't know. Gotta ask you a question.
Hal approaches Brutal, who stands with a man wearing a badge.
Thanks. Well, I'm to the bars a few days back. Scared the boy so bad he wet himself.
The man with the badge takes notes.
See, we didn't even see it happen.
Hal and Paul step away.
I'll cover for you as much as I can, even if it means my job. But I have to know. Does this have anything to do with what happened in my house?
Arms folded, Paul looks down. Hal stares at him.
Does it, Paul?
Raising his eyebrows, Paul shakes his head.
No.
Now a door swings open. A man's legs shuffle forward. Dark slippers cover his feet. Men in white coats ease Percy into a room with a bed, a chair, and a brown hardwood floor. They place him in front of a wall with three large rectangular windows. Percy stands motionless in a white hospital gown as the men exit. Now a black metal gate in front of a large brick building with many windows. A sign arches over the wrought iron gate, Briar Ridge Mental Hospital. Now Coffee, a smile on his face, sleeps on his cot. Coffee sits up. Paul and Brutal stand in front of the cell.
Hello, boss.
Hello, John. I guess you know we're coming down to it now. Another couple of days.
Paul stands with his arms folded. Coffee nods. Entering the cell, Paul picks up a stool. Placing it in front of Coffee's cot, he sits and folds his hands in his lap.
Anything special you want to eat for dinner that night? Can rustle you up most anything.
Coffee twitches his lip. Paul smiles and turns to Brutal, who stands by the cell door.
Meatloaf be nice. Mashed taters, gravy, okra. Maybe some of that fine cornbread your missus make, if she don't mind.
Paul nods.
Now, what about a preacher? Somebody to say a little prayer with?
Don't want no preacher. You can say prayer if you like.
Me?
Paul stares at Coffee.
Suppose I could, if it came to that. John.
Paul licks his lips.
I have to ask you something very important now.
I know what you're going to say. You don't have to say it.
No, I do. I do have to say it. John. Tell me what you want me to do. You want me to take you out of here? Just let you run away? See how far you could get?
Why would you do such a foolish thing?
On the day of my judgment, when I stand before God, and he asks me, why did I kill one of his true miracles? What am I going to say? That it was my job.
Paul looks down.
It was my job.
You tell God the Father it was a kindness you done.
Coffee places his hands on top of Paul's hands.
I know you're hurting in word. I can feel it on you. But you ought to quit on it now. I want it to be over and done with. I do.
Coffee takes a deep breath.
I'm tired, boss. Tired of being on the road, long as a spell in the rain. I'm tired of never having me a buddy to be with, to tell me where we's going to, coming from, or why. Mostly I'm tired of people being ugly to each other. I'm tired of all the pain I feel and hear in the world every day. There's too much of it. It's like pieces of glass in my head all the time.
Coffee frames his head with his hands.
Can you understand?
Paul nods.
Yeah. John, I think I can.
Well, there must be something we can do for you, John. There must be something that you want.
Coffee's eyes move from Brutal to Paul. Then Coffee tilts his head and closes his eyes.
Never see me a flicker show.
Now, Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers dance on screen.
And my heart beats so that I can hardly speak. And I seem to find the happiness I seek. When we're out together dancing cheek to cheek.
Coffee's mouth is open as he stares at the black and white movie. The bluish light from a projector in the back of the room shines over Paul's head. Sitting several rows back, Paul smiles as he watches Coffee. Rows of empty folding chairs line a large room. Coffee sits in the center of the room. In a booth in the back, Toot yawns as the film projector runs in front of him. Paul and Brutal exchange glances across an aisle. Paul then turns behind him where Dean and Harry sit together. Smiling, they both nod at Paul. Coffee is still as he gazes up at the movie screen. Astaire, wearing a black tuxedo, and Rogers in an evening gown, dance side by side in matching movements. The blue light of the projector fans out behind Coffee's head. His lips turn slightly upward as his eyes scan the movie screen.
What are these angels? Angels just like up in heaven.
Smiling, Coffee gazes at the screen. Three guards stand at one end of the mile. Paul joins them. Side by side, the four walk across the mile. Coffee sits in his cell with his head down. He looks up. The guards stand outside Coffee's cell as Dean unlocks and pulls open the door. The guards stand staring at him. Coffee stands from his bed. He approaches the guards. Coffee lowers his head and passes through the cell door. He stops in front of Paul.
Be all right, fellas. This here's the hard part. I'll be all right in a little while.
John, I should have this just for now.
Paul removes Melinda's silver St. Christopher medal.
I'll give it back after.
You know, I fell asleep this afternoon and had me a dream. I dreamed about Dale's mouse.
Did you, John?
They walk.
I dreamed Mr. Jingles got down to that place Boss Howell talked about, that Mouseville place. I dreamed of his kids and how they laughed at his tricks, my... Those two little blonde-headed girls there, they's laughing too. I put my arms around them and set them on my knees, and there's no blood coming out of their hat, and he's just fine. We all watched Mr. Jingle roll that spoon. How we did laugh. It took us we was.
Inside the execution room, Klaus sits with his arm around Cora. They look up. Brutal leads Coffee through the door, holding his right wrist. Paul follows them, holding Coffee's left arm. Coffee stops walking.
John, there's lots of folks here hate me. Lots. I can feel it. It's like bees stinging me.
I feel how we feel then. But we don't hate you. Can you feel that?
Coffee nods his head.
Kill him twice, you boys. You go on kill a raping baby killer twice. That'll be fine.
The guards seat Coffee in the electric chair. Coffee swallows hard as he's buckled into the restraints. Cora closes her eyes and lays her head on Klaus's shoulder. Dean looks up with watery eyes and a pursed mouth. Paul turns to him.
Wipe your face before you stand up, Dean.
Yes.
Dean rubs his eyes and nose. He and Paul stand and walk from the chair. Paul turns and faces Coffee, hands behind his back.
Roll on one.
Van Hay turns a dial. A row of light bulbs switch on in succession. Coffee looks up.
Does it hurt yet? hope it does. I hope it hurts like hell.
Joan Coffey, you have been condemned to die in the electric chair by a jury of your peers, sentence imposed by a judge in good standing in this state. Do you have anything to say before sentence is carried out?
I'm sorry for what I am.
Paul closes his eyes. Harry unfolds the black hood and begins to pull it over John's head.
Please, Paul. Don't put that thing up on my face. Don't put me in the dark. I was afraid of the dark.
Paul looks to Brutal, who returns his gaze. Paul looks back toward Harry and nods.
All right, John.
Paul shakes his head at Harry, who looks back at him wide-eyed. Harry removes the hood from Coffey's head. Paul kneels and dips the sponge in the water pail. He places it on Coffey's head. Harry sets the metal cap on top of Coffey's head, then buckles the leather straps. Harry tightens the wing nut, securing the electrode and cable to the metal cap. He nods to Paul, then steps away.
John Coffey, electricity shall now be passed through your body until you are dead, in accordance with state law. May God have mercy on your soul.
Paul and Coffey stare at each other, frowning. Dean watches with a red, watery face and pursed mouth. He closes his eyes, then lowers his head. His shoulders shake. Van Hay looks upward, frowning. Harry darts his eyes around, his face twitching. Brutal stands with a tight frown. Paul stares at Coffey with moist eyes. Brutal steps close to Paul. Paul's mouth twitches. Coffey sits with his eyes narrowed. Paul steps toward Coffey, hand extended. He takes Coffey's hand into his own. Coffey squeezes Paul's hand.
He kill them what they love. That's how it is every day, all over the world.
Paul nods to Coffey with a tight frown. He pulls his hand from Coffey's and steps back. Paul's eyes moisten and his mouth trembles.
Roll on to.
Van Hay jerks the lever. Coffey's body tenses, his teeth clench. Paul watches with watery eyes. Harry frowns, looking down. Dean stands with a red, contorted face and watery eyes. Brutal stares with a frown. He swallows. The overhead lights behind Paul explode, spewing a shower of sparks. Paul stares as sparks fall in front of him. Now, in the infirmary, Paul looks down. He reaches to his side. The St. Christopher medal dangles from Paul's hand. He places the necklace around the neck of Coffey's corpse. He straightens the locket against the skin of Coffey's neck. Coffey's eyelids are open. Paul looks to Brutal. Brutal pulls a sheet over Coffey's body. He pushes the body away as Paul remains standing.
was the last execution I ever took part in. I just couldn't do it anymore after that. It was brutal either. We both transferred out, took jobs with Boys Correctional. It was all right. Catch 'em young became a motto. You don't believe me.
I don't imagine you lie to me, Paul. It's just that...
It's quite a story.
It's quite a story. One thing I don't understand. You said you and Jan had a grown son in 1935. Is that right?
The math doesn't work, does it? Do you feel up to taking a walk?
Elaine and Paul, wearing bright red coats, approach a dilapidated wooden cabin at the end of a forest trail. They walk through the door of the cabin. Inside, an array of objects hang from the ceiling and clutter shelves and tables.
Watch your step. Now let your eyes adjust.
Paul guides Elaine further into the cabin. He points down. A cigar box rests on the floor.
Wake up, old fella. Wake up.
A mouse emerges from the cigar box, peering over the rim.
Paul, it isn't. It can't be.
Paul kneels on the floor.
Come over here, boy. Come on over here and see this lady.
The chubby gray mouse crawls out of the box.
That can't be Mr. Jingles.
Paul smiles and picks up a spool on the floor beside him.
Monsieur et madame, bienvenue au Cirque de Mousy.
He places the spool on the floor in front of the mouse. The mouse inches forward, then rests its forepaws on top of the wooden spool.
Go on, you can do it.
The mouse lets go of the spool. Paul pulls a piece of bread out of his shirt pocket.
This isn't exactly the Mouseville we had in mind, is it? We make do. Don't we, old fella?
He gives the bread to the mouse, who takes the bread between his paws and nibbles.
I think Mr. Jingles happened by accident. I think when we electrocuted Dale, and it all went so badly. Well, John can feel that, you know. And I think a part of whatever magic was inside of him just leapt into my tiny friend here. As for me... John had to give me a part of himself. A gift, the way he saw it. So that I could see for myself what Wild Bill had done. When John did that, when he took my hand, a part of the power that worked through him spilled into me.
He what? He infected you? Life?
Paul smiles.
It's a good word as any. He infected us both, didn't he, Mr. Jingles, with life. I'm 108 years old, Elaine. I was 44 the year that John Coffey walked the Green Mile. You mustn't blame John. He couldn't have what happened. It was... He's just a force of nature. Oh, I've lived to see some amazing things, Ellie. Another century come to pass. But I've had to see my friends and loved ones die off through the years. Hal and Melinda. Brutus Hal. My wife. My boy. And you, Elaine. You'll die too. And my curse is knowing that I'll be there to see it. It's my atonement, you see.
Elaine in a coffin.
It's my punishment for letting John Coffey ride the lightning. For killing a miracle of God.
Almighty everlasting God.
A funeral.
Source of all being and life.
You'll be gone like all the others. I'll have to stay. Well, I'll die eventually. That I'm sure. I have no illusions of immortality. But I will have wished for death long before death finds me. In truth, I wish for it already.
Now, a dark-haired Paul, wearing his guard uniform, walks down the mile. He turns around and looks at the floor. Mr. Jingles crawls out from under a door.
Mr. Jingles?
He kneels. Mr. Jingles runs into Paul's outstretched hand. Paul cups his hand, lifts Mr. Jingles, and stands.
Where you been? Been worried about you, boy. You hungry? Let's go see if we can't find you something to eat. A few crumbs, anyway. You like that?
Now Paul walks through the nursing home. Later, he lies in bed.
I lie in bed most nights, thinking about it. And I wait. I think about all the people I've loved, now long gone. I think about my beautiful Jen, how I lost her so many years ago. And I think about all of us walking our own green mile, each in our own time. But one thought, more than any other, keeps me awake most nights. If he could make a mouse live so long, how much longer do I have?
Mr. Jingles lies curled in the cigar box in the cabin.
We each owe a death. There are no exceptions. But, oh God, sometimes the green mile seems so long.
Descriptions made possible by the American Broadcasting Company. Description created by NCI Described Media.